You're listening to Highland Radio. Highland Radio.
Hello, very good Saturday morning. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition with Greg Hughes. 7 minutes past ten. Hope we find you very well. Coming up on the programme, with two weather warnings in place, Matt Heron will join us to give us the very latest of what we can expect. Johnny Ward, who plays Paulie in Love Hate, joins us to tell us about how he got that gig. We have Donegal private water schemes, which we're told to the envy of the international community. We'll hear more. Age Action tells us about the return of their Woolly Hats for Smoothies campaign. And we preview the Gough Gaffer Festival taking place in Mallon this month. All this and much more coming up for you between now and 12 o'clock. Text us on 086 77 00 555, or you can call us too on 074 91 25000. Yes, indeed. Hope you're very well, as I say. Busy programme between now and 12, but what we're going to do, as we always do at this point, is kick off with a look at the main stories which made the headlines during the week, and indeed what's on the front of the papers today. The papers are, as always, sponsored by Kelly's Centra at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny, so thanks very much for that. We're joined in studio by regular contributor at this stage, Claudia Kennedy. Hey, Claudia.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me back.
It's great to have you back. Now, it's been a funny week, hasn't it? There's been a number of stories that have dominated. It hasn't really changed a great deal, but some of those stories have moved forward to some extent. So where should we start?
Well, I'm going to start with the Irish Independent this morning, Greg, and they lead with a story of the very tragic and sad death of that toddler in Dublin. This is a harrowing case. It's very sad as you're reading through this. Now, it appears that the Child Rescue Ireland system was put in place for this young child over a year ago. He was found safely and he was found with his father, and he was then returned to his mother. And we learn from the Irish Independent today that the HSE had launched an investigation and had found that all was well and had returned him to his mother. I think reading through this, Greg, it's very important that the HSE, the new Child and Family Organisation Tulsa, and of course the Child Rescue Ireland alert system is in place for vulnerable families, and that there has to be follow-up on all of these cases as well. It's a very sensitive time for the family. Our thoughts and prayers are with the family. It's just extremely sad, extremely harrowing, but I think it's very important to note that those organisations have a duty of responsibility to follow up and investigate and to ensure that it is a safe environment for those children to remain in.
In this case, there were red flags, though, that have popped up over the course of just the short few days ahead of the tragedy, and indeed further for that. So it seems we can draw from that that perhaps maybe, or should we draw from that maybe, that what's supposed to kick in didn't kick in.
Well, there is an investigation going on. We have to be quite mindful of that. But it is clear to say that the CRI, the Child Rescue Ireland alert system, was alerted to this child. He had gone missing. The HSE had launched an investigation into the family, so he definitely was on their list and he definitely was known to them. Whether there was further follow-ups done and whether there was further systems put in place to support that family, we do not know yet. But I think it's very important that those organisations will continue to follow up on those cases, Greg.
What's your feelings about this being almost like a trial by media? The newspapers yesterday had concluded how the child had died and who was responsible before the Gardaí had even elevated their investigation to one of murder. And now we're discussing the events leading up to this case. Are we doing the right thing in having that conversation, or should we be letting the law, the process, take its course and then perhaps reflect down the line? There is this almost trial and discussion by media based on little bits of information. Is it the right way to do it?
I think the media have to be very sensitive as to what they're reporting in this story. There's other very vulnerable families out there. We have to be mindful of how this story will actually affect them as well. I think we have to respect due process and the legal process that is there also. I think in due time, when we can reflect, and Minister Fitzgerald spoke on this yesterday, that we can investigate the facts of what actually happened. The most important thing to note here is that organisations such as the CRI, the Child Rescue Ireland, Tulsa and the Department of Children are actually following up on these very, very sensitive cases. That's the most important thing that we have to take from this.
There's a broader issue, though, isn't there? Because I believe this is, at the very least, the third case of a death within a family. Mm-hmm. We had a tragic case in Sligo, and then one further down the country too, where siblings lost their lives within the home. And now we have this a horrible case. But that is three, obviously, too many. Is there mm-hmm. a broader question here than generally speaking?
There is. I think that there is a lack of services. I think that there is a lack of services available at weekends, for example. I feel that more funding is needed. I feel that mental health issues within Ireland need to be looked at, particularly in the case, perhaps, of this particular mother. I think that we need more funding. We need a bigger conversation around this. And we definitely need to have a clinical perspective on this as well. Within the HSC, within the Department of Children, we need a coordinated approach. But we need more funding. We need more services. We need a clinical perspective on this. And it's just very harrowing and very sad. The most important thing, I keep coming back to this, is there is an obligation and responsibility upon the HSC, upon the Child Rescue Ireland and the Department of Children that they do follow-ups on these critical, sensitive cases.
Well, just for the latest on that, a 43-year-old woman is due to appear in court later this morning. It's charged in connection with the tragic death of 2-year-old Hassan Khan. We will keep you up to date with that, of course, as the morning and afternoon progresses on our news bulletins. 086 77 00 555. If you wish to join the conversation by having your say, your comments are the most important, of course. Yvonne waiting to take your call to 07491 25000. Been really busy the last couple of weeks, so let's keep that momentum going. Okay, Claudia, what's next then?
So we're going to move on now to the water charges debacle, Greg, and it has been a very, very difficult week for this organisation, and rightly so. We now have an organisation that sent, and the local authority, particularly in Wicklow, who sent very threatening letters to members that are in rental accommodation. Bully boy tactics was one word used to describe the letters, saying that these people could be evicted from their homes. This caused huge fear, anxiety, terror among the community, really, Greg. It was absolutely despicable. It was absolutely awful. And on that note, I have to commend Donegal County Council and the councillors who came out very quickly to amend the fears within Donegal to say that Donegal County Council will not be issuing such letters. Donegal County Council and their councillors will not be evicting people. There was a very good, quick response, a very good coordinated response as well. It's there in the side notes of the Irish Independent today, so I want to commend Donegal County Council for that. But coming back to this organisation of Irish Water...
Well, before we do, this Wicklow situation... They really dropped the ball themselves. It's a cock-up because the county council has no responsibility for water charges. I mean,
correct?
Okay. They own the houses. They are the, they are the landlords, and these people are the tenants. But the whole problem was for many people is that it's Irish Water that are dealing with collecting charges. So it had nothing to do with Wicklow County Council or any other local authority for that matter. And whoever is responsible for this letter being issued and the stress that they put these people through completely outside the law and legislation needs to be held account for it, because, you know, I mean, obviously, as I say, we got the clarification yesterday that the clarification the council gave is, look, it's not our problem, we're not sending letters because we aren't the body responsible for it any longer.
Yes.
So Wicklow County Council need to be held account for that and issue letters of apology to the people that they worried unnecessarily.
Absolutely, I would agree, Greg, and I think the whole approach to this has been very unprofessional. It was very uncoordinated. We had Minister Alan Kelly apologising on behalf of Wicklow County Council to say that the letters were unhelpful and very intimidating. I agree, absolutely, the County Council has no remit. Irish Water is a different entity, they're responsible. Furthermore, it's an agreement between the tenant and the actual body, which is Irish Water. It's nothing to do with the landlord. I think their approach was absolutely despicable. They caused fear. I absolutely agree. There should be letters of apology actually published straight away, and there needs to be some kind of formal recognition as well within the government and an apology from the government as well on this issue.
Well, when the local authority doesn't understand how water charges are being implemented, it adds to the concern. But you want to talk more broadly about Irish Water as a entity?
Yes, Greg. Now, there was reports yesterday that people had rang Irish Water with concerns. For example, if I have a leak, who's going to fix it? Why do you need my PPS number? What are my allowances that I can get for my family? And people were waiting up to 40 minutes simply to get an answer. And we had representatives from Irish Water apologising, saying this wasn't very good and we would look at improving this within the future. It's simply is not good enough that we do not have anybody to answer the phones. We have nobody to answer very simple, clear questions. There's a total lack of information. There's a total lack of clarity. It's absolutely despicable. And furthermore, To add insult to injury, we now learn that the workers within Irish Water will receive bonus-related payments. So in our eyes, really, that's them being paid bonuses for a job that they're already paid to do. And it's going to be added into their salary structure, which I think is just absolutely horrendous in a very difficult time.
Is it not normal, though, in a company that are paying people that you incentivize them to do the job more effectively? And if they do the job more effectively, then it's the customer that benefits from that?
Well, no, I would disagree. I think they are very well paid. I think that Irish Water has already eaten up enough of Irish taxpayers' money. We've looked at consultancy fees, for example, which is a total waste of money. And now we have more wastage of money. Absolutely not, Greg. I think we're in recessionary times. We've all taken cuts. We have all suffered. I think that this is absolutely awful that these workers would now be looking and will probably be paid bonus performance related payments.
Also emerging this morning in the newspapers is the court application for a 20 metre exclusion zone of the people who are installing these water meters. Is that something you would agree with? Do you think that should be granted?
No, I do not agree with that. Again, I think this is very bad communication skills. Very
should
bad
they not
PR.
Be able to get on with their job, though, without the fear of feeling intimidation, whether they're being intimidated or not?
Well, I think going back to the very beginning, had Irish Water and the government communicated with their public, with the citizens, give very clear information, held public meetings, linked and liaised with the county councillors. Now, we know the county council and the county councillors are not responsible for Irish Water, but just give them the basics, meet with them, give them the information that they can allay these fears. That did not happen. We have a culture of them versus us, and this idea of, well, we're actually fearful for our job.
If they started to, I don't know what the figure on county councillors is across the country at the moment, if they started meeting every county councillor and then every TD and then every senator, Irish Water would spend every single day for the next God knows how long meeting people, hearing individual specific concerns that they can't address anyway. So at least, I mean, and I'm paying devil's advocate here again, at least are they not being honest in saying, look, there's no point just meeting you because we can't take any action on your individual concerns.
No, but I would argue against that and say that you could do a collective meeting of the county councillors. Mm-hmm. You can present the findings. You can look at case studies of the general types of questions that are going to pop up.
Well,
and that these councillors are in a position to answer these questions because they are being contacted. And we can just see this week, it was a responsibility of Donegal County Council and their very hard-working councillors to come out and speak on this issue, Greg, and to allay those fears. And then we look at Wicklow County Council, who mindlessly sent out that very, very intimidating letter and caused a huge amount of fear and anxiety. And I would imagine in the future we will probably have more examples of that. So I feel there was an onus upon Irish Water and the government to meet collectively with these councillors.
Okay, well, that's what they are to some extent, because there are 8 regional meetings taking place across the country. I believe there's one in Carrick-on-Shannon towards the end of October, where representatives of, you know, I mean, it's going to be a broad church, Donegal, probably Sligo, Roscommon, North Leitrim, or whatever they call these different areas now. So is that not good enough, or is there just going to be too many councillors to really address any issues, and it's just going to be a preaching session from Irish Water?
Well, firstly, I think it's too little too late. This should have been done 2 years ago when they're in the planning process, when they knew that this was coming down the line. I think they had a responsibility again to be very clear with their information, very clear with their county councillors, very clear with the public. I think Irish Water are making this up as they go along. That's
but you're paying
opinion.
Your water charges, aren't you?
Yes, I will be, and I want to make this very clear. As a citizen, I feel I have a responsibility and I will pay. However, I feel that the government and Irish Water have not taken into account people's ability to pay. This
so why reward issue. Them? Why reward them by paying your water rates then, if you feel strongly about it?
I feel I have a responsibility as a citizen to actually pay those water rates. I disagree with people coming on air and going on the media and saying, for example, don't pay your water charges. That's what they did in the past about the property tax. And at the end of the day, Greg, we will have to pay these taxes. They will have our PPS numbers. And they might be able to go into our accounts and take the money. In the long run, you will probably have to pay those along with
extra charges. In fairness, and I know there's people listening from that organisation that will say, no, they won't. This is not like the property charge. This is not the remit of revenue. You know, they can't come in. They can't come in and start dabbling with your wages. No more or less than the ESB could, you know. So But there is consequences.
There
and
is
I mentioned it yesterday because, you know, there's talk that it could affect your credit rating, which could affect something as simple as getting a contract on a mobile phone, mm-hmm. if Joan Burton would permit that. Or, you know, going to your credit union, getting a loan or what have you. So
yes.
there are consequences, and it would be perhaps...
I think it's irresponsible of any public representative to say to their constituents, do not pay your water charges because I'm not going to pay those water charges. I think in the long run, those individuals, those citizens, will actually, they individually will live with the consequences of not paying those charges. Now, I feel the government have totally let the public down. I know this week during the budget, they're trying to bring in certain measures. They're not enough. They have not taken into account people's ability to pay, Greg, in very harsh recessionary times.
Well, they gave people, they're giving... 100 euro assistance to certain people in certain brackets, though. Is that not taken into consideration people's ability to pay?
They have, and it's reported in the Irish Independent today, in that particular tax bracket where they're going to get that extra 100 euro, that will alleviate 80,000 people out of that scheme. But they actually made a mistake. The government actually spoke about this, and so did the minister. They actually wanted to take 200,000 people out of that remit and give them that extra 100 euro. So even when they were making up the budget, even when they were looking at these allowances that they would make in relation to water charges, they didn't even get that correct on budget day. And it's reported here in the Irish Independent today.
There's a thing, too, about this whole situation, which I don't know how broadly it's been spoken about. These concessions, as it relates to water, aren't coming from Irish Water. Irish Water will get every single red cent that they request. It's the taxpayer that is funding any breaks in the water charges. So it's not that Irish Water are coming out and saying, OK, look, the certain people in certain situations mm-hmm. will give you 100 euro assistance here, and in other areas will give you assistance there. It's the taxpayer that is actually not only setting up and funding Irish Water,
correct.
But also now, to try and soften the blow of Irish Water, it is the taxpayer that is paying for these concessions.
Absolutely.
Which is peculiar. And I don't hear anybody talking about that.
No. And coming back when we talked about the bonus-related payments, and you had said, well, they're a semi-state organisation. Are they really a semi-state organisation
well,
when you
not,
look at what we as taxpayers have contributed?
We have full ownership of it, but I believe that's what it's been set up for. And people feel maybe then that that's being set up for it to be sold, you know? So,
and I think as well, in terms of the government, I don't think they realise how angry people are. The by-election results this week as well prove that. And the candidates that were elected, a lot of them campaigned on one issue, and that was water charges. And they got elected on that one issue of water charges. So, and again, we looked at the huge protests that were in Dublin last weekend. By the way, it takes a lot for Irish people to go out and protest. If you look at what's happened in this country since the bailout and the recession, you know, for people to go on the streets in Ireland and to campaign and to be very, very vocal on issues, it's very near to their heart. Mm. And there was thousands in Dublin
up
last weekend.
100,000, they say. 086-77-00-555. Text us if you have anything to say, or call Yvonne 07491-25000. That's Irish Water. It's going to rumble on. I don't know what the end game is. It depends really on the level of public resistance going forward. 100,000 people odd to get out in Dublin is huge.
Massive.
But that if people who are opposed to these charges want to see them sort of, you know, stopped or deferred or whatever, that's going to have to be consistent, you know.
It is, and I think on a personal level, on a political level, Fine Gael have a responsibility. They are the main party in government to come out on this and be very clear, make it clear to their public, speak with Irish Water. I've been reading as well in the Irish Independent today that not even TDs and senators are very clear on this, Greg.
I have to make the point as well, though. It is your party, Fianna Fáil, who signed up for these water charges. And now being so opposed to them, you know, you talk about what Fine Gael have to stand up and do. Maybe Fianna Fáil have to stand up and say, yeah, we did sign up for them. We support them. Everyone should pay them. Because we probably wouldn't be in this situation if it wasn't for your party in government.
And Greg, I accept that. And perhaps you didn't hear our finance spokesperson, Michael McGrath, as he commented during the weekend. We have said in Fianna Fáil, we will be paying our water charges. We have said water charges are here, but we are constantly making the argument that we need to look at people's ability to pay. We want
no
a fair,
one has the
transparent
ability, yes,
system.
But the point is nobody feels they have the ability to pay. You know, people talk about the squeezed middle, the middle income earners. Then you've got the low income earners. Then you've got people on social welfare. Then you've got older people relying solely on a pension. Who are these people that you talk of that have the ability to pay? People with swimming pools.
No, Greg, no. And that's very facetious to say
I'm making the point. Who are the people that have the ability to pay them?
I am making the point that when Irish Water have been brought in, they've eaten up taxpayers' money.
Yes.
And the government feel that we should be contributing some type of tax towards Irish Water.
What is the category of people that Fianna Fáil is saying have the ability to pay?
Well, we're looking particularly, I suppose, at high-income earners. You're looking, I'm a middle-income earner. I'm that squeezed middle-income earner. I know I'll be paying my water charges because I have a civic duty to do that. It would be very irresponsible for me to sit here today and say otherwise. We're talking at giving people a fee that they can actually afford. That could be €20, €25, €30. We're looking at something that's going to be very reasonable for people.
How can you establish a company that is charged with improving the country's infrastructure, that is, we're half of the water in this country that's treated is washed away. How can Fianna Fáil say that that situation could be addressed by charging people £20 for water?
We'll come back to what we have said within Fianna Fáil, and again, our spokesperson, Michael McGrann, Finance, has spoke about this. We spoke about it during the week, and we've made this very, very clear. The infrastructure in this country has not been looked at yet by Irish Water. We're looking at millions spent on meters.
That's the end game, obviously, because, you know...
Well, would one not argue that that should have been done at the very beginning? If you look at the massive amount of...
Well, it should have been done 40 years ago.
If you're looking at the... I agree with that, absolutely.
During the boom, when your party was in power.
Absolutely, I'm not disagreeing with that. That would have been a wonderful investment in money, obviously. Yeah. That's a very logical argument to make, and I would agree with that. I would argue that the pipe should have been fixed first. We're talking about the leakages. We're talking about the quality of water. You're looking at people in this country that can't even drink their water. We know that they're going to be asked to pay for that water. Mm-hmm. The allowances have not been clear. They have changed on a daily basis. The amounts of money that people have to pay are changing constantly. The government don't seem to know to give any correct information on this. It's an absolute debacle and nothing is very clear. There seems to have been no orchestrated planning at the very beginning, Greg, and I think that's what's getting people extremely angry and agitated.
086 77 00 555 is the text line. You can call Yvonne on 07491 25000 or tweet me to GregHughes2 at GregHughes2 if you so wish. Right, okay, I think people are sick of Irish Water at this stage. What next?
We're going to move on to something that I think is very, very important, and that's looking at speed limits. Now, Donegal County Council would have received letters from our Minister for Transport this week, Pascal Donoghue, in which he outlined taking a look and a review of speed limits within housing estates, particular to ensure child safety. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge issue, and again, it's a very tragic situation too, where we've had instances of death due to this issue. Furthermore, and I think this is an excellent move, where we here in Donegal County Council have actually wanted this to go one step further, and we want the councils nationally to review safety measures and speed limits outside our counties and country schools. And I just feel this is a huge issue. And being a secondary school teacher, I see this every day where our young people are walking to school, they might have earphones on, they might have their hoods up, they might be talking with one another, not paying attention. This is a huge issue, and it's one that came up on the doorsteps when I was canvassing in the local election. It's one that I've heard on many, many occasions. We need something to be done on this, Greg. I feel it's very important. It's very serious. I think it could save lives, and it needs to be done, I would say, as soon as possible.
The problem we have here, and we are a reactionary society to some extent, rather than, you know, trying to prevent something. I think anybody listening to the programme today knows a school very close to them. Maybe it's on a national primary route or not. There's these couple of orange flashing lights that are on. In some cases, they're on at random times. People just ignore them, effectively. Yeah. They've seen them so much at this stage. And you have schools where people are whipping past at 100 miles an hour on sweeping bends or blind bends or what have you. And a lot of parents would know, too, when they're trying to pull in and out of these places, the dangers involved in it. It's something that we don't want to have to revisit or visit when, you know, one, two, three or four people are killed as a result of... us not acting on it.
Yes, and I think this is very manageable. This is something that we can do. It's very achievable. There's many, many issues you could look at. For example, extra lights, road markings. You could look at speed ramps, looking at extra signage. There are so many things and protocols that we could put in place that would work and would be effective straight away. And I have to commend Donegal County Council on this as well, and they've come out very strongly. Again, I'm coming back from my daily experience as a teacher and driving through First Stranorda, for example, where there's a huge amount of traffic every single morning. It's the main road going through into Letterkenny. Absolute gridlock. It's just unbelievable that this has not been looked at before. Mm-hmm. So I think this is something that we can do. It can make an outstanding difference to people's quality of life. Safety and road safety, it's of massive importance in this county. And I would like to see this being moved on as soon as possible.
Texter says, Greg, I don't mind paying for my water if it's good, but I'm paying almost €600 a year road tax on a car that's almost 10 years old. I thought I was paying my water charges. Well, you are. You are paying your water charges. The Local Government Act permits and allows, and I'm sure it happens, for €600 million per year from the road tax to be transferred to the water services. So that's not a myth or a misnomer. That is an actual fact.
On that point, sorry, Greg, I would just argue, how much of that money does actually go to water services?
Well, it goes into the pot, into the kitty.
You see, that's it. And then it might go to housing, it might go to other issues. It does not always go to the water services.
Your electricity's gone up £30 from today as well, because there is a new levy on that. I'm not sure how many people are aware of that. So there's a sneak tax.
An indirect tax. Yeah. Another indirect tax.
Other charges are coming into play now, says this caller. PSO levels are being increased as well. Everything is free for these politicians. It's a disgrace for the ordinary man. Irish Water does not answer their phones to help us. I think the politicians should be charged with treason. And another caller says, is it the poor people that are going to pay for water charges? Yes, Greg, it certainly is. 086 770 0555. If you wish to text, if you've never texted a radio programme before and you don't think that you should, I encourage you to do so. You'd be surprised at the small portion of people, and I'm very grateful to them. It's a fantastic community of people that interact with community with radio stations around the country, but it's a very small portion of people that actually do, proportionate to the amount of people that are listening. So make a change, get your voice and get your opinion heard. 086 770 0555, or call Yvonne if you prefer, 074 91 25000. The council now are being asked to look at that. Some housing estates have 80 kilometre speed limits, for crying out loud.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
There is an issue, though. Speed ramps aren't the answer to everything.
No.
You don't want these noisy white lines, so if cars are going past in the middle of the night. But people need to get their heads together, is what you're saying and what the minister's saying, and come up with something to make our housing estates and built-up areas safe for
absolutely.
Our children. And if it can be broadened out to that other issue, which has been going on for absolutely ages, these 100 kilometre speed limits past schools.
It's unbelievable. In today's day and age, I just find that unbelievable that there has not been a coordinated national approach to this. And can I just say, on the canvas as well, I met fantastic residents' associations, Greg, where these people had actually wrote to Donegal County Council. They'd asked for signage, and they actually got together and put up the signs in their own actual residential areas as well, because they have been so concerned about this. So people are out there trying to fix the solution themselves. So I would love to see the County Council act on this. Very important.
Just one for you. That lady on with you, Greg, seems a nice person. I hope she wins a seat in the next general election, from a Fine Gael supporter. You're not going to be running in the next general election, are you?
No, I have not been asked to run in the next general election, but I'm very much delighted to have that support. And just to say, to go through any election, it's quite tough. It's quite emotional, Greg.
Oh, my heart bleeds.
I want to make this very clear. The community have actually been fantastic, and
that's the nice aspect of it, of course. You know what you're getting involved in.
But I want to make that very clear, that the community and the support from the public has absolutely been fantastic, and I want to thank them for that. And they have been there in many guises, in my community work and through education. I just want to make that clear from that lovely text, that I'm very grateful and thank you for their support.
Right, what do you got? I think we're almost close to our last one or two things we're going to talk about here.
Yes, now I'm going to go on to the Ebola case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, firstly, and we had discussed this earlier, Greg, I think in terms of the Irish government, they have handled this very well within the Department of Health, and they have not gone for scaremongering. And we know with the death that happened up in Mount Charles, and the poor man and his family, where people had thought he had Ebola. And there was absolute panic, there was fear. It was a very dangerous time. I know, particularly up around Mount Charles and Donegal Town, the national media just absolutely hounded the people without facts, I may add, and without technical results as
indeed.
Well.
Indeed, and I just want to make a comment on that, a point on that, if that's okay. And I agree with you, because, you know, there was some headlines in some of the Red Top papers which were shocking by anyone's standards.
Mm-hmm.
The initial information was leaked to RTE from the HSE. That's a fact. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent to that, the HSE gave little to zero clarification. So, you know, in the absence of facts, gossip, rumour and speculation fills that vacuum.
It does.
So, you know, I mean, in fairness to the media, it was leaked in the first instance that there was a suspected case. And, you know, in fairness, the gentleman, and God rest his soul, he had visited the West African area in question. So there were red flags there that need to be addressed. But it was a leak to the RTE that started that ball rolling, and then a lack of clarification despite numerous communications with HSE as to what the situation was. And it came through very, very late. It was very hard to get. And that didn't... I think we've learned some lessons from that.
We have learned from that. We have. Now, what I would say within the Irish Times, and it's a very good story here by Harry McGee, and again, it's on that Ebola case, and really it's look at David Cameron's reaction to the European situation. He's asking Europe to do more. Now, the one thing that I would commend Britain for, and they have done this, they have been the only country to introduce airport screening to date. Now, I feel that's a step in the right direction. I think that's
what
practical
is?
Airport screening.
Really? It's not. That's just to please the public. Look, if I go through Heathrow with a flu, I show up with a raised temperature, and then I'm taken to one side, and I'm a suspected Ebola case.
Firstly, I'm sure that they have medical personnel, and
but the point I'm saying is everyone with a high temperature going through this system is flagged. I mean, that's just really just to say, look, the public are getting scared. We need to do something. You stop people travelling, don't you? It's at the other end that you stop people getting on planes, surely.
Well, no, I think in actually reading through this article by Harry McGee in the Irish Times, the one thing I would say, and I came back to this at the beginning, the Department of Health and our Minister for Health has been very good. He's been very calm. He has had a very good approach to this. And I'm very honest when I say that they have handled this issue quite well. As I read this article, the one thing I took from this, and particularly the British aspect, is they have put this one measure in place. And as I read this, I thought, that is quite sensible, Greg.
That's my opinion. My opinion doesn't matter. But just to pay a counter-argument to that, they're not even direct flights. They're flights that are going through at least one other airport. I mean, it's just to say, look, British public, we're doing something.
Well, this is costing the British taxpayer a lot of money that they're doing
this.
Well,
they need to start asking questions, I think.
I believe that they feel that this is a step in the right direction.
I'd love to hear from a doctor. If a doctor or GP is listening to the programme, maybe I'm way off the mark, but it sounds to me like a knee-jerk reaction. 086 770 555, or call us 0749 125.
Actually, and just on that point, Greg, the EU are to meet this week in Brussels, and there is going to be a coordinated European approach to this. So perhaps at the end of this European meeting, this might come as a European directive in relation to airport screening.
Does it bother you at all that we're only talking about this now, and I'm being emotive purposely to some extent, that it's only being discussed now because white people are getting Ebola?
No.
There was thousands of people in Western Africa. We did nothing as an international community on great level. NGOs were in there risking their own lives trying to stop the spread of this, trying to control it in West Africa. It was on the news, third, fourth story down. The Western community in a general sense didn't seem to worry a great deal about it. Then we get a case in America, we get a suspected case here, and now all of a sudden, we hear talk of this vaccine could be out in 5 or 6 weeks instead of 3 or 4 years. We hear of, all these initiatives that are taking place. Should we not have said, right, we are a global society, and when this started becoming a serious problem in West Africa, threw all of our resources to help those people in there and try and stop these 3 or 4, 5 thousand people who are dead now and many more infected from losing their lives?
I think, Greg, you're forgetting the fact that the Irish government actually gives aid to Africa. That's the first thing. There's been a number of Irish doctors that have actually volunteered and gone out there to work and to do research on this issue. The third thing I would say is the World Health Organization have admitted that they have had a mishandling of this entire outbreak as well from a medical point of view. But no, I disagree with your point. I feel that we as an Irish nation, we do give our aid. We have many wonderful volunteers that are working over there, that are volunteering.
I'm talking about Ireland, Britain, America, Spain, France. I'm on about, you know,
international
response, that only people woke up about it when it visited their own back door. And maybe that's not the case, but that's the question I'm asking you. I'm suggesting an argument. Is that the case, that now we're only talking about it, now we're only worried about it because it could come into our homes?
I feel that there's obviously, because it's an immediate threat now, obviously if it's in Africa and it's not near you and it's not going to be affecting you in your daily routine, then it's something over there, and of course we're going to try and help, and we have done that. It's a normal human reaction, Greg, that when you feel under threat, whether it's your health or whether it's your safety, that you're going to react. So on a very human level, I think the international community have reacted because it has obviously come as a threat to them. But I do want to make it very clear that we as a nation and Ireland and the European Union have been very clear in terms of giving aid into West Africa, having Irish doctors volunteering over there and giving their summers. So you know, I want to make that clear. It's not that we've just totally neglected them and that we don't care about them. That is not true. I just feel it was an immediate threat to our own safety.
Okay.
And perhaps then we reacted slightly quicker.
That's actually all we have time for.
No problem,
it
Greg.
Always goes so quick. Claudia it Kennedy, does. Thank you so much. Of course, for those people, I didn't introduce you at the start, that you're a community worker in the Twin Towns and broader area.
That's correct, yes, Greg.
And you did stand for Fianna Fáil, although you speak so highly of the government. Maybe you're switching, are you?
No, I'm not. I think it's very clear. And we've always said this as a party in opposition, and Micheál Martin. We're going to be a responsible party in opposition, and when a good policy is put in place, we say yes, that is a good policy and we agree with it. If it is not a good policy and if it's not for the good of the people, then we'll stand up and we call it out as it is. That's very important. This idea, Greg, of reactionary politics and opposing everything for the sake of opposing it, it's not good politics and it does not deliver for society or our constituents. So it's about being responsible. It's about being honest as well.
And just finally, I mean, there was a lot of conversation during the week about Micheál Martin and his ability to lead Fianna Fáil into the next general election. Would he have your full support?
Full support, 110%. I feel Micheál Martin has done a fantastic job. He is trying to reunite the party. He's had a difficult job. There was a meltdown within the party after the last general election. He is very honest. He is very, very good at bringing people with him. And he has a very nice, quiet approach as well in I suppose, working with people, committee work. He has made it one of his goals to have women involved in the party on a higher level, both within the national executive and both standing at the local election and hopefully the general election as well. And we've actually set up a new commission within the party named the Markovitch Commission as to how we can actually promote women in the party, particularly for 2016.
Okay, Claudia Kennedy, thank you so much for coming in. It's always a pleasure. We'll have you, of course, if you will come back over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you very much to everyone texting the programme and calling us so far. Loads more interesting things to discuss between now and 12. The usual mix on a Saturday morning here in the weekend edition. A bit of showbiz, a bit of community news and good news as well. So hopefully you can stay tuned with us. To us and with us, of course. Claudia, again, thank you very much. 086 77 00 555. Keep those texts coming into the programme. Call us to 07491 25000. There are two weather warnings in place. Met Aaron's going to join us shortly just to say, break it down for us on a very local level. What does that mean to us over today and tomorrow and into Monday? Is it something we should be particularly concerned about? Paulie really took the Irish showbiz circuit by storm. If you're a fan of Love Hate, you'll know Paulie. He's that new character that seems to have a broad appeal between men and women. He's performed by Johnny Ward. Johnny's going to join us on the programme between now and 12. You know, with all the talk about water and, you know, there's a great deal of negativity about that. Well, you know, we've got some hugely successful private water schemes here in County Donegal, which apparently are actually the envy of the international community. And there's a delegation coming over over the course of the next week to who are looking at best practice to see how that's being done. So if you're listening in one of those areas, I think, you know, where we're talking about, we'll have a brief chat about that as well. Over the years since 2008, there's this fantastic initiative from Age Action whereby people knit little woolly hats for smoothie bottles, and it's been a big moneymaker for Age Action. They end up getting sent in to us here, which is fantastic because you want to see some of them. They're brilliant, and as they come in, we'll be sticking them up online and what have you. And we're going to give talk about that too because it's such a worthy initiative. Eamon Timmins will join us to have a chat about that and how you can get involved. And hopefully too we'll be talking about the Gough Gaffer Festival, which takes place in Mallon later in this month. So tons to come up. We're going to play some music as well too, you know, because you must be getting sick of the sound of my voice at this stage, so we'll be playing a bit of music as well. That's all to come between now and 12, and Pio will join us as well to have a wee chat as well about what we can expect coming up in his show. Right, we'll be back with more on the show after this quick break. Okay, so it is the weekend. Lots of people either getting married and those attending weddings. So we always like to keep a good close eye on the weather at the weekends for you. Harem Laux is a meteorologist with Matarin. Good morning, Harem.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with you. I must say, actually, you're my favourite Matarin broadcaster, if that's okay for me to say.
Glad to hear that.
Now, tell us, two weather warnings for the northwest. What can we expect?
Yeah, it's a blustery weekend, and there will be heavy showers. So that's what the warnings are out for. There could be potentially a lot of rain in those showers, adding up and over the whole weekend. And it will be blustery, windy as well with that. So although temperatures are reasonable, about 15, 16 degrees, it won't feel that pleasant with all that wind and those heavy showers. Having said that, at the moment there are no showers in your area yet, but they are expected to develop this afternoon, and then they will continue this evening and tonight, and for much of Sunday as well. So that's the story really for the weekend.
There's some talk of perhaps almost gale force winds in coastal areas. Is that the case? And is there any risk of structural damage or that level?
I wouldn't go that far as
okay.
Structural damage, but certainly at sea, gale force winds will be reached, and at coasts that are exposed. The winds are coming from the south. So it depends a bit which coast there are the highlands. You might be a bit sheltered from the south for the wind, so might not be too bad, but still very blustery at the same time. And if there's any structures that are loose, they might get a bit of a damage. But it's not an exceptionally windy day.
But if we're out on the road, certainly inclement weather for driving, and we need to take care there for definite.
That's for sure. And especially in and around showers, it could be quite blustery.
Mm. And I know people, but meteorologists don't like to put too far ahead, but what's next week looking like, even just, you know, with the usual caveat that things can change?
Things can change, that's right, yeah. But it's looking pretty unsettled, I'm afraid. Real autumn weather, more wet and windy weather, probably on the way. There are remnants of the Hurricane Gonzalo, which is now on the other side of the Atlantic. It will cross the Atlantic, will lose its identity as a hurricane, but it will still probably bring a lot of wet and windy weather later on Monday and into Tuesday. So that's the next thing we're watching.
Harem, a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. That's Harem Laux there, a broadcast meteorologist with Met Aaron. Okay, it's 8 minutes to 11 o'clock. As I've already flagged, a busy hour and a little bit still to come on the programme. Keep your text, calls, comments coming through. Requests, more than welcome to the show. 086 77 00 555, especially, I suppose, for the younger ones who may be listening, because school's out, of course, with it being the weekend. So more than happy to hear any messages for them as well. Or call us to an 07491 25000. And if you think there's something we should be talking on the programme, it's our programme, as I like to say, not mine or Yvonne's. So you can always get in contact with us with your suggestions there. Okay, we are going to take a piece of music now. Well, the nominations closed last evening to find our next manager for the Donegal GAA, Donegal Senior Football Team, and others, actually. Tom Comack of the Donegal Democrat and our GAA correspondents join me in studio. Tom, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you indeed.
So what is the situation? How many names have been nominated as of close of business 5 o'clock yesterday evening?
Well, we're not actually quite sure on the exact number because the county board aren't releasing the names. What we do know is what have been confirmed are in the public domain. We have Rory Gallagher. We have Carl Corey, we have Paddy Carr, and we have Anthony Hark, and they're the four that are in the public domain and have been confirmed to be in the race. There are, I believe, a couple more, but we're not sure, and they're not going to be released.
What happens next?
What happens next? Donegal County Executive got approval at the last county committee meeting to form a 5-person interview committee to interview all the nominees for the position. Three of those positions have been filled, the county chairman Sean Dunyan, the county secretary Martin O'Farrey, and the county treasurer Kieran Kelly have been nominated, and the two remaining positions, one more person from the Donegal Executive, that's the main officer board, and one from outside, with obviously a GA influence and a GA knowledge, are to be appointed, and that will be a process I expect to be done on Monday night.
And they will come up with the decision as who the next manager will be, or do they come up with a shortlist? Or
they will come up, as far as I understand, with the next manager, I would expect.
Now, from there, is it only the manager's appointment that is made, and then whoever gets that job, he fills his backroom staff, or...
I presume that the people who have been nominated will name their management or backroom team, because that's important part of the process as well. Who's with who, it's as important part of the process probably as the front man himself.
And not ruling out, or with no disrespect to any other candidates, now that Rory Gallagher's name is officially in the mix, he would have to be favourite, or is he?
Yeah, well, as the Eustace Leon Yes Minister, you can say that, but I can't. But obviously, he would appear to be.
Why can't you say that, Tom? You're an independent journalist.
He's definitely the front runner for the position at the moment. But in respect to the other people, I don't think we should be actually at this stage sticking anybody up front. But I think Rory is the front runner, and I think that's generally acknowledged. The position, the nominations for the county under 21 manager and the county minor manager closed yesterday. There's a vacancy in both of those.
Both of the incumbents are seeking to retain those roles.
Maxi Curran, who had actually Rory Gallagher as his number two, and he was manager of the under 21, and Declan Boner, who was manager of the Donegal minor team that reached the All Ireland final. He is also interested in the position, as I understand it. We haven't got those nominations either, but names we hear have been linked to the under 21 position are Gary Duffy from Buncrana, and Eamon O'Boyle, of course, former St. Junan's manager. And the name we hear, one other name been mentioned in relation to the minors, that's Sean Ball, Paul Barrett, who has managed Donegal at under 17 and under 16 level over the last few years.
Okay, and I think everyone would want this process to be speedy and with little or no issue. Do you anticipate that?
Well, that would be the hope, and I think it's a process that we have maybe stumbled on in the past, but I have all the confidence in the main officials that we won't trip up this time, because we have had embarrassing situations in the past and caused a lot of acrimony, which wasn't to anybody's
benefit. Never benefits the game or the county. And finally, briefly, Jim McGuinness is going to speak about, he's going to be interviewed this evening on the Saturday show on RT. What do you expect, anything that we don't know out of that?
I don't think will be any major exclusives. Maybe I'm hearing this week actually that Jim's position, and this is just on the grapevine, I'm hearing that Jim's position has become a 5-day week or a 5-day full-time position with Glasgow Celtic. We may get that, I'm not sure. We'll watch out for that tonight. Unfortunately, I'll miss it because I'm at a family wedding.
Right, well, we catch up on the player, or I'll tell you something. I'll give you a buzz and tell you what the crack is. Listen, thanks so much.